Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
He would appear in the dark.
Hunting, literally hunting.
He was a killer.
World of Secrets, Season 3, The Apartheid Killer. Listen now, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
As soon as it's your turn, you know, whether you're starting or whether you're going second, you've got to be ready to make an impact. You've flown 30 hours and you get one shot, 50 seconds, you know, a minute. So the pressure is really there. The pressure is really real.
This is Rachel Gunn, or Dr. Gunn, as she's known at work.
University lecturer Ray Gunn wants to go. Final of the final. Last chance.
But in 2024, she's about to step out onto a stage that's rather bigger than a college lecture theatre, and under a different name. Welcome to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service, which uncovers the inner workings of the world's most creative minds. I'm Amelia Parker, and in this episode, we're following Australian dancer Ray Gunn as she prepares for the performance of a lifetime.
Ray Gunn, 2-1!
Wow, it's tight!
It came down to the last...
In late 2023, she became one of the first female dancers, or B-girls, to qualify for the Paris 2024 Olympics in its newest category. You might have heard of it as breakdancing. That's the term the media coined in the 80s to describe it. But breaking is its real name. Rachel should know. She's got a PhD in it.
Breaking is a culture. It's got its own traditions and practices. It's also a community. It's a lifestyle. It's a dance. It's a sport. It's really hard to pin it down into any one thing. Breaking emerged in the Bronx in the 1970s. It was developed by African-American and Puerto Rican kids in community house parties and jams as a really positive social space for young people to express themselves, to create their own little subculture. I've heard it been described as, you know, a mix of gymnastics with, like, the coolness of skateboarding with some of the performativity of tap style dancing with some martial arts mixed in there. So it's, you know, it's pretty hard to describe.
Since then, breaking's remained a subculture, but it's also become this globalised, dizzyingly virtuosic, competitive dance sport. And it's evolving all the time.
There's no set repertoire of moves, and innovation is encouraged, if not required. So you learn the foundation, which is ever expanding, and then you are expected to develop your own way of moving or your own moves or variations of moves or your own kind of way of performing.
And when you've learnt those moves, you step out and put them into practice against someone else, your competitor.
It has always been a social dance, and by social dance I mean through the dance you exchange with one another. So you do a move, the other person recognizes that move, they'll respond with a variation or they'll respond with their own move, and so it's a bit of a conversation that you're having.
After qualifying, Rachel eventually had to hit pause on her day job and throw everything into her Olympic training. The first time I meet her, she's over in Europe in the middle of a warm-up tour, entering competitions in Cyprus, Italy, France, and here in Birmingham, the UK. Weaving my way through the crowd circled around the dance floor, I can see her name, Ray Gunn, on the screen, along with competitors from across the globe.
Next up, we've got Catherine from the Republic of Korea, representing Soul Drive. Let's go, Soul Drive.
It's so hard as an Australian going to these big international competitions. We're so far away. You're jet lagged as hell. You know, the time difference is massive. And you're a complete unknown. You're an absolute complete unknown.
To a newcomer, it's quite discombobulating when you arrive. There's a lot of elements going on. a DJ mixing live, an MC running the proceedings, hyping the crowd. The dancers come on and off the floor in what feels like the blink of an eye. I'm trying to figure out how these competitions even work. How is it being judged?
So essentially in a battle, you are compared against your opponent, round for round. Who between the two of you are better across the judging criteria?
And what are they?
Execution, so your cleanliness, your form, your flow, and your technique. Your vocabulary, so your range of movement, not just doing everything on your head, also using other parts of the body in different orientations and different kinds of movement. Your originality, what new you're bringing to the dance, as well as your performativity in the dance. And your musicality, how well you are responding to the music, the different textures, the different rhythms. You've just got to do those things better than your opponent.
All right, nice, let's get the floor.
Watching Rachel and the other dancers move seriously blew me away. But it turns out I didn't catch her on a lucky day. She got knocked out earlier than she'd hoped. Over a cup of tea, she was open about some of the setbacks that she'd had.
I think this trip has been really enlightening for all the wrong reasons. You know, it's made me find myself again, I think. For a long time, I was practicing start to finish sets. Because these competitions have such high stakes, you want to make sure you have enough content, have enough moves. But whenever I did a set, I was totally distracted and trying hard to do the set, and I wasn't listening to the music. This whole learning process has been alongside going to these big international competitions and not doing very well, which is really hard to do, you know, a few months out from the Olympics and when people are starting to know your name. It's really hard to fail in public, you know. It's a lot more mentally challenging than I expected. But it's been a really important trip, I think, for pushing myself.
I was quite thrown by Rachel's vulnerability here. She doesn't sound too downbeat, but since getting to know her, she could have been putting on a bit of a brave face. There's a sense of a real mountain to climb. What lies ahead is part training regime, part creative act. And there's only so much you can control.
You just never know what's going to happen on the day in breaking. There's so many variables, you know, it depends on who you get in the lineup, who the judges are, what their preferences are, what the makeup of the panel is, what the music is. You know, the music makes such a difference because, of course, we're hearing the music for the very first time.
Let's go, DJ.
As soon as we step out onto that dance floor, the DJ drops the beat. And we've got to be ready and adjust and pretend like it's the dopest track we've heard in our lives, even though we might be dying inside. And there's a huge range of what people enjoy, what works for people, what brings out their strengths in their movement. And for some, breaking is totally a sport. It's totally about showing the most difficult moves. And look, that's awesome. That is seriously awesome. And there's also people that just see breaking as an art form. And it's about saying something. It's about doing something beautiful. It's about captivating the audience. And so you've got to also be comfortable with staying true to what you want to say and what you want to put out there.
Back. Reach. Up. Jump. Down.
For Rachel, it's time to look forward. With the Olympics just a couple of months away, when she'll be representing this new sport to a global audience. So, it's back home to Sydney and back into the practice studio to put in the hard work, repeat her moves, and think about what she's going to do.
I was looking at the breakdown of how the judges scored me across the categories, and that has helped to inform my training since.
Jump. Down.
What I have been working on is my dynamics, so incorporating some more power moves, which are, you know, the more kind of gymnastic-y style moves, some more freezes, which are essentially a pose, but you're holding it in a pretty difficult position, like in a handstand or a headstand or something, to help show my breadth of foundation and also to create moments of contrast in my set.
Boom.
The music can elevate what you do, or it can detract from what you do. But you know that at the end of an eight count, there's going to be something. So you want to hit your freeze on the eight or the one count. And breaking, you know, it's like you've got a sentence and you're making a point, you know. And when you come to the end of that point, is it a comma or is it a full stop or is it an exclamation point? And so you got to think about how you finish that point. And so often you'll use a different type of freeze or a different kind of pose to make that point. So I have danced my whole life, doing different styles. I did ballroom for many years. I did jazz and tap for many years, some swing dancing for a while. And it wasn't until I was 20 and I started dating a guy that was a breaker. I would go along to the little community center where him and his mates would practice. And, you know, they'd be all doing flips or doing all these kind of, you know, difficult moves. And I was this really quiet, shy girl in the corner going, oh my gosh, what is this world I've walked into? And after a while, he started teaching me some moves. And oh my gosh, it's so hard. Like, I don't think people realize how hard breaking is because it looks quite easy. Many of the moves, the dancers make it look easy, but that's part of the technique. You know, you hide the technique. Started training more regularly and harder, and I entered my first battle within a year. And that boyfriend has continued to be so supportive of me every step of the way. And now he's my husband and he's my coach. So it's I really wouldn't be here without him.
Our next stop on Rachel's journey is on the streets of Sydney in a spot close to her heart. I asked local journalist Phil Mercer to head over for a catch-up.
Just describe specifically where we are and why we're here.
Sure. So we're outside the Downing Centre Courts in Sydney, and it is a criminal courthouse, but actually it's also been a spot used for breaking practice for more than 20 years, actually. This is such an important space. It's also the home of my crew, 143 Liverpool Street Familiar. So it's a place of significance for me because it's where I've mostly trained over the last 10, 12 years breaking. So it's always nice coming back to this place and training.
What are we doing here? We're all getting taped up, are we? Is this
Yeah.
yes, injury avoidance, is it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, avoiding further injury.
Yeah.
That's Sammy, by the way, Rachel's husband.
As the stages go on, the athletes get more and more sticky taped up to hold themselves together.
Yeah, so we're taping up my wrist, my right hand, because, it's just started, hurting a bit more and more lately as my training's gotten more intense.
How are preparations going?
It's crunch time now. Probably a few weeks ago, a month ago, we realised we were a little bit behind where we should be, and we've done the necessary changes, and we're looking good. Still always going to be things to be tweaking right up until the day, but that's going to be the same with everyone there.
What lessons, Rachel, did you learn from the European trip recently?
I think in hindsight it was exactly what I needed. One of the challenges, I think, for us Australians is that we don't have the same level of experience dancing on a big stage. So it has been about changing our performance of my moves so that they are bigger and they are clearer and so they're more suited for the big stage. Adding that real kind of performance element and using the crowd all those sorts of things, which is a hard thing to practice because, you know, I don't have a big stadium to practice in. I don't have a big crowd to practice to. But that's why it's also nice coming here, because it's a bit more of an open space than training in a studio.
Now, you've got a 3-hour training session today.
Yep.
What does that involve?
It's going to be me just running through all my combos to different music and performing them at different intensities, at different speeds, and stitching them together in different ways.
Which combo are you going to show us very briefly?
That's a very good question. What do you reckon, Sam?
So Rachel's running through a combination that we would loosely describe as being in footwork, so that's in a lower position than standing up. She's putting in some knee slides in there, and the angles and shapes she's making stylistically are more distinct of hers. None of the other athletes there will be doing this particular movement. And then she finished off a series of kind of slides back and forth along the ground up into a tucked handstand position with a little bit of tweaking of the shape there to style it out.
I'm trying to feel every step and express every step, be swift but not rush. You know, it's tough, but I've just got to get these combinations, these sequences of moves on my body as much as possible so that, you know, my mind is free to think of other things.
How'd you get on, Sammy, with the job share, being a husband and a coach?
Yeah, that's an ongoing learning process for everyone. We just, as much as we can, try to keep it separate. So when we're in the training space, we try to keep it as a coach and an athlete. And then when at home, we can revert to husband and wife. It doesn't always go that cleanly, but what's works best. Because that's necessary as a coach to have the hard, like, you need to do better, this is not good enough moments there. And that can be quite hard coming from someone who you're that closely entangled with. But I wouldn't have it any other way. I think there's also a pros to it. We have a deeper understanding. We can talk in shorthand more. And then sometimes the coaching does seep into the home life as well. If I have a little idea pop up and I'm like, oh, I had an idea for that combo. So sometimes there's no break from breaking.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
He was known to be a killer. Even if you see him in the town, everybody will say he's the killer.
This is the story of a man who killed so many people, he lost count. But despite his shocking death toll, he only served 12 years in jail.
It's astounding that anybody could get away with it.
And the families of his victims want justice.
That justice system ultimately ignored all of those bodies and all of the families.
From the BBC World Service, World of Secrets, Season 3, The Apartheid Killer. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
In this episode, following dancer B-Girl Raygun as she counts down to represent Australia in breaking at the Paris 2024 Olympics. Now, there's something we need to address here, because breaking is an art form with strong roots in African and Latin American communities. As it hits the mainstream in the world's most famous sporting competition, could there be a danger that dancers like Rachel are pulling breaking away from the culture that made it?
This is a dance form that was born out of disadvantage, you know, and it has been a way for many people that have been disenfranchised to find a voice. So what does it mean to have someone like me, a, you know, privileged white woman, to be doing this dance? It's a tough question, you know, and it's uncomfortable sometimes to think about it, but I think it's also important for me to be uncomfortable. So, you know, I try and use my platform, my skills, to advocate as much as possible for breaking, particularly where I'm from in Australia, to be able to access the amazing tools and positivity and community of hip-hop culture. The other thing I try and do is I'm not trying to replicate. I've got a very particular way of moving. And obviously, I'm still using the tools of breaking and the foundation. I'm still paying my respect to that. But I'm also trying to bring my own way of moving on top of that. So I feel like that's the way I try and navigate the potential cultural appropriation space in which I'm sitting. I don't think it's a perfect answer, but I think also it's still important for me to talk about it.
With just a week before she flies out of Australia, Phil spoke to Rachel about how breaking has shaped her own identity.
B-girl Raygun, where does that come from?
Well, Raygun is just essentially from my name, Rachel Gunn. And it's been a way for me to kind of become someone new, I guess. Breaking is such an integral part of my life now. You know, I can't untangle Raygun from me. But I think it's given me permission and it's given me the confidence to do things out on the dance floor that I might not have had the confidence to do. I'm not scared of a crowd anymore. And of course, my lecturing job, you know, lecturing to hundreds of first year students was pretty terrifying at first. I'm not really scared of that anymore. So yeah, the camera, the lights, the crowd only excites me. It really only excites me. And I'm just really, really looking forward to that. But you know, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to represent my style, my crew, my country, and you know, show myself.
If you haven't worked it out yet, we're now in Paris. It's 2 weeks before Rachel competes in the Olympic Games, the day before the opening ceremony. The city's thronging with people. Police are stationed outside all the Olympic venues, making it tricky for us to get a sneak peek. So I head to meet her and Sammy at 104. It's a bright, echoey arts centre where Parisians can come and practice their talents in a free public space. Alongside breakers, you'll find everyone from acrobats to salsa duos and clarinetists.
So it's great to see you in Paris.
Yes.
Where it's all happening.
Yeah.
How does it feel to be here?
It's pretty surreal to be here. I think leading up to flying out, I was getting pretty anxious and pretty stressed out. And then even when we were at the airport, I had a little cry because it's all suddenly here. Like, it's all real. And, you know, it's getting closer and closer on my calendar. And that is really exciting, but it's also overwhelming at times, for sure.
I'm not surprised. And how does the city feel at the moment to you? I guess it's quite different to some of the other athletes that have come to the Olympics. You're probably sequestered away somewhere in private and you're out here in the city.
Yes.
Training in the middle of everything.
I'm out here in the city training in public spaces, you know, among artists and performers. So I think it's quite different to the majority of Olympic athletes, for sure. I wanted to come over to Paris early to adjust from the jet lag, to acclimatize to both the heat and to the atmosphere of Paris. And so, but with that, we didn't have as much support coming over early. So it's been a little bit tricky navigating all that, but it's definitely cool to be reminded of this aspect of the dance and the culture in light of the Olympic stage that is coming.
In a little underground side room, I watched Rachel put on a black cap and become Raygun as she got down to train.
Things over the last couple of weeks have really started to come together, which is nice. You know, all the strength and conditioning work that I've been doing, you know, finally I feel like I'm strong enough to do all these moves. So it's really nice to kind of just work on refining techniques and skills here and there.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Sat on the sideline, I was struck by how she wasn't practicing alone now. She and Sammy were battling each other.
Well, that's something that we've really ramped up since our Europe trip, and that's because, you know, as soon as it's your turn, you know, whether you're starting or whether you're going second, you've got to be ready to make an impact. And so you've got to practice that, you know, and it sometimes feels a little bit funny, you know, kind of pretending that you're performing to a crowd in just like a dance studio or something, but you do have to think about that. And that has been something that we've been really working on, that engagement with the opponent, the taking the space confidently, the kind of enjoyment of the music that's expressed on your face and in the way that you dance. And then, of course, finishing strong, walking off the stage strong. So, yeah, that this has become an important part of our training, just doing these rounds against each other. The round robin groups have been announced, so I know who I'm going to be battling. Two of them are world champions, and one of them is a up-and-comer French girl, so she's going to have the hometown advantage. So, you know, I've definitely got my work cut out for me. But the good news is that none of them do what I do. None of them have this style and creativity as their key strength.
That's great that at this point in your journey you're able to really recognise that and really own that for yourself.
We've heard Rachel say some of these things before, but maybe you can hear what I hear. There's a real sense of energy about her, a brightness in her voice. She sounds ready. With just one day till the Olympic Games open, I ask Rachel how she feels, looking back to the start of the process.
Look, it has been a bit of a journey of self-discovery, finding out who I am as a breaker and what kind of performance I want to give on the Olympic stage. And for me, it's not just about the athleticism of breaking, spinning the fastest or jumping the highest. I want to bring art to the Olympics, you know. I want to bring something beautiful, something aesthetic, something that's exciting to watch in a different way. Breaking is just really opening new possibilities in terms of human movement. People are going to see things that they didn't think the human body can do. But my approach is going to be bringing that out more artistically.
What do people say for good luck in breaking? I guess it's not break a leg.
Yeah, look, I know, people haven't known what to say to me. I think people in breaking usually just say, like, you know, get it. Just, no, what?
Let's go.
Let's go. Okay, yeah, true. Let's go.
Let's go.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service with me, Amelia Parker, following B-girl Ray Gunn and wishing her all the best as she gets ready to represent Australia in breaking at Paris 2024.
He was known to be a killer. Even if you see him in the town, everybody will say he's the killer.
This is the story of a man who killed so many people, he lost count. But despite his shocking death toll, he only served 12 years in jail.
It's astounding that anybody could get away with it.
And the families of his victims want justice.
That justice system ultimately ignored all of those bodies and all of the families.
From the BBC World Service, World of Secrets, Season 3, The Apartheid Killer. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.